I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition, live from the State House as the legislature begins its business for the 2016 session. We're broadcasting live from the Cedar Creek Room. Our view encompasses the huge mural on the wall painted by Julian Scott in 1874. It highlights Vermont troops fighting in the Battle of Cedar Creek in the Civil War. It's a fitting location to be talking about the grand issues the legislature will soon be facing. Today, opening day is one of pomp and circumstance, introductions and reunions, but it's not long before the two chambers get down to business. In fact, we're talking like 10 minutes after they start. One of the first things the Senate is likely to take up is the fate of one of its own members. Here to fill us in is Vermont Press Bureau Chief Neil Goswami. Hi, Neil.
Hey, good to be here in the Cedar Creek Room.
I know. It's a lovely place to be having a show. We could do this every day. that member that I alluded to that the Senate is going to be negotiating or debating the fate of is Norm McAllister. He was arrested just before the end of the session last May on sex crime charges. His trial hasn't started yet. He says he's determined to continue to work as a senator. He cites his constituents that he needs to represent the people who elected him. Members of the Rules Committee had been deliberating in the intervening months. What did they actually do in the last couple of weeks to get us to today?
So there was an effort early on to try and seek to expel Senator McAllister, and that really went by the wayside when members of the Senate realized that it would require a hearing, testimony, witnesses, evidence, that sort of thing. And so recently, the Rules Committee voted to advance a resolution to suspend Senator McAllister, which means he would not be able to participate in the Senate's deliberations, wouldn't be able to take his seat on the Senate floor, but he would continue to receive pay. And that would not require the type of hearing and presentation of evidence that a hearing for an expulsion would take.
And is that why they decided on a suspension, was because they were worried they wouldn't be able to actually get an expulsion?
I think they were worried about harming the criminal proceedings or interfering with the case in some way, even if it was unanticipated. And so this seemed to be a way to move forward with removing him from the body without jeopardizing the criminal case.
That vote was 3-2, though. It was fairly close.
It was fairly close, and one of the members, Rutland County Senator Peg Flory, is a close friend of Norm McAllister, and I believe that she still strongly supports him and may introduce a substitute resolution tomorrow that would allow, basically change it to allow him to stay on as a member of the Senate.
And tomorrow is when the full Senate will take this up. What is likely to happen tomorrow?
You know, I think a lot of members are reluctant to discuss it and give their predictions, but today it was introduced, which means tomorrow it will be called up. They will debate it. Senator McAllister has told us reporters that he intends to be here. He intends to speak out on his own behalf and make his case to his colleagues that he should stay on and be allowed to continue as a full member of the Senate. It appears to me that there are enough votes to suspend him. That seems to be the most likely scenario. Tomorrow, after the votes are cast, that he will be suspended and no longer be able to sit there on the Senate floor.
What's the actual procedure? My understanding is that Senator McAllister will be able to defend himself or to speak for himself, but senators can't ask him questions.
So my understanding from Secretary of the Senate John Plumer is that they won't really be able to address him directly. Typical rules of the Senate require you to speak through whoever is at the podium, and you address your questions through that person. So, you know, if they hold to the rules, they will not be addressing Senator McAllister directly. They will be speaking to the presiding officer of the Senate and vice versa.
So what we've heard so far is that Senator McAllister does plan to speak on his own behalf tomorrow at these proceedings. You actually spoke with him today. Has he talked about what he might do in response to a suspension vote?
A number of us did speak with him today, and he declined to get into the details of what he intends to say tomorrow. He told us to basically stay tuned and find out tomorrow when he delivers whatever remarks he intends to make.
Did he say anything else interesting to you?
We were talking to him for a number of minutes, and the senator mentioned
again. And the
again,
we is a whole scrum of reporters.
Basically a gaggle of reporters who followed him from the Senate chamber to the cafeteria in order to ask him some questions. And he maintained again, he maintained his innocence, said he did nothing illegal. I asked him if he believes he did anything immoral, and he said no. And I asked him if he believed he did anything unethical, and he said no. And if he had, he would have resigned. And because he believes so strongly that he has not done anything illegal, unethical, or immoral, he has not resigned.
Before we let you go, Neil, just remind us where his legal case stands.
Right now, they are, I believe, still taking depositions in the case, and it's tentatively scheduled for trial in February. It looks like, because depositions are still ongoing, that is likely to get pushed back, perhaps to March or April.
And he has been charged with three felony sex crimes.
Three felony sex crimes and three misdemeanors as well.
That's Neil Goswami. He's Vermont Press Bureau Chief. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you. Great to be here. I hope we can do this again in this room.
Yeah, well, good. We'll ask the Sergeant at Arms. We are broadcasting live from the State House today as the legislature returns for the second half of the biennium. Now we're going to talk with leaders of the Republican, Progressive, and Democratic parties, alternating between the House and the Senate, to get a look at some of the issues that are pretty sure to be heavy hitters in this session. If you'd like to ask a question of Joe Benning, Shap Smith, or Chris Pearson, now is the time to get in the queue. You can call 1-800-639-2211. That number again, same as always, 1-800-639-2211, or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Democrats hold strong majorities in the State House, and the Democratic Speaker of the House is Representative Shap Smith. Nice to talk with you again, Senator.
It's great to be here.
Representative, excuse me, I'm elevating you already. So you opened the session today, as you always do, and you gave what to me sounded like both a pep talk and a little bit of an admonition to your chamber. You want people to think about Vermont's children and the opportunities that your children have, perhaps other children and other people that the representatives are aligned with or living with, and then to say all Vermont children should have those same opportunities. And then you said, don't let election year politics get in the way of doing the people's business. Yeah. Why did you feel like you needed to give that little line there?
Well, it's just a reminder, and I think it was actually a reminder to not only the body, but to Vermonters that, you know, in general, I think that we do a really good job of avoiding electioneering in the legislature. And I just wanted to remind people that I think it's important for us to do this this year. I mean, it's important for us to do it every 2 years. But I think that we've got huge challenges facing us, and we need to focus on those rather than November.
What happens when people are focusing on November? What doesn't get done?
Well, I'm not saying that it's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it's a democracy, and people have to run for office. But my view has always been, and I think that this sort of rings true, is that if you focus on the work that you're doing and you do it well, November's going to take care of itself. So let's focus on the things that most Vermonters are concerned about. It's, you know, jobs. It's the opiates crisis. It's making sure that people have opportunities, you know, in education. And affordable housing, issues like those, if we pay attention to those issues, we're going to do fine in November. I mean, I'm not going to do fine in November because I won't be on the ballot. But, yeah.
Yes, but all of the seats
everybody
are open.
Else,
everybody
right,
else who's rerunning. Yeah. All right, let's talk about some of the issues then. So some of the issues you're likely to tackle this year, marijuana legalization, possibly making changes to Act 46. That's, of course, the education reform bill, education spending, a big piece of that that's been controversial. How to deal with Medicaid cost increases that are really driving some of the budget difficulties that we've been seeing. What else do you see is really looming large?
Well, I think that those are key issues for us, and we'll definitely spend some time with each one of those issues. I think that the things that I hear about are concerns around jobs and the infrastructure that's necessary for them. I hear real concerns about the cost of higher education, how we can make that more accessible to people. You know, there's just this sort of nervousness around there.
Around higher ed or around?
No, I think just in general, people are feeling nervous. Even though the economy has been improving, they're just not ever sure when the other shoe is going to drop. And this is not a challenge that's unique to Vermont. And I think it's playing out in the national elections, and you see this sort of in this populist fervor, I would say. I was saying earlier in a press conference, I've been reading the Bully Pulpit, which is about William Taft and Teddy Roosevelt and that period of time. And there are a lot of parallels to sort of the economic transition that we're going through now and the economic transition that we were going through then, and how people really felt like while the economy was prospering, it wasn't broadly spread. And I think that's an issue that we still are dealing with and grappling with now.
So have you learned any lessons from that book that you're going to apply
well,
in this session?
Well, I haven't finished it yet.
You better hurry up.
Yeah.
You've already gotten started today.
I'm about 300 pages through, and I got about 400 more to go.
You should have done that before the session. Now you're going to be too busy.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about marijuana, because this is one that, at least in the weeks now leading up to the start of the session, has been really at sort of a fever pitch, people talking about it. You, for a long time, didn't support legalization. When you were running for governor, you sort of came out saying, you know what, if we can do it right, I will support it. Where
yep.
do you stand right now, given that, you know, you've got no skin in the game?
Yeah, no, I still actually think that if we can do it right, that it makes sense to move it forward. But it's much more complicated than most people think. It's not just turn a switch on and all of a sudden you have legalization of marijuana. You have to create an infrastructure for the distribution and the production and the sale of it. You've got to create a tax system. I think it's going to be really important to understand how you ensure public safety on the roads, how you put in place public health programs to make sure that kids under 18 are not having more ready access to it because it's legalized. Those are really complicated issues. And as I've said over the last couple of weeks, you know, it just doesn't feel like we have done all the work that's necessary to flesh those issues out to pass it this year. That's not saying it's not going to happen. It just doesn't feel like it's ready. The other barrier, I think, and nobody has really told me how we would deal with this, is I think there are a lot of upfront costs, and it's not clear to me how we're going to pay for those upfront costs, given the budget challenges that we face right now.
Medicaid cost overages and increases, a big issue. It's caused a budget deficit for the fiscal year that we're currently in. It's a projected deficit for the budget that you guys will be working on this spring. What should be done? Should we limit eligibility so that we have fewer costs? Should we find some kind of revenue source that is a dedicated revenue source? The governor was advocating for that last year, but it didn't go through. What should be done?
So I don't think that limiting access to Medicaid makes sense. What you're doing is basically saying, okay, we're not going to provide coverage for you. Why don't you go find other coverage? And we're talking about people who facing a lot of economic challenges. So,
but Vermont is one of the most generous states when it comes to Medicaid eligibility.
We certainly do have Medicaid eligibility that extends more broadly than it does over the rest of the country. But remember, we also have one of the lowest uninsured rates in the country. So it's working, and it will be a problem for those people who can't get Medicaid if they get thrown off of Medicaid and they've got to go either into the exchanges or buy employer plans. It doesn't get cheaper for them to do it, and it creates a bigger economic challenge for them. So I think the issue is less about do we restrict eligibility and more about are we doing the kinds of things that private insurance companies do to manage the utilization of the services? Do we make sure that before you get an MRI, you have to have six PT sessions? Are we doing things that are used in the private sector and that help manage the costs? Those are the kinds of things that I think we have to take a look at.
So I'm not saying your solution, but one of the things that you want to do to curb those costs is just to be more efficient in the actual practice of the medicine.
Yep.
Don't we still need, or do we still need a revenue source, though, to pay for the costs that this program is going to actually cost the state?
I think over the long run, we will definitely need a dedicated revenue source for Medicaid. I said this earlier this week. In the private insurance market, when the cost of healthcare go up, the premiums go up. And in the public sector, when we provide insurance through Medicaid or Medicare, we don't have a mechanism that does the same thing. We have to go and decide whether they're going to raise taxes. And people don't, understandably, don't like to raise taxes. but it doesn't mean the costs go away. So we've got to figure out a way to do that if we're going to continue to have both Medicaid and Medicare.
So basically, raise the premiums. It's just going to be charged to the taxpayers.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I think that we have to figure. So right now, what happens is when we don't raise the taxes, the cost goes to the private sector, or it's borne on the backs of the people who are providing the services, and that's a problem.
We'll look at that more as the session continues, because that's certainly something that's going to have to be looked at least in the short term.
Right.
Let's talk about Act 46. This is the education reform bill, and it included spending caps for school districts as well as incentives for districts to combine and to have sort of these large unions, larger supervisory mm-hmm. unions. Should the state amend Act 46, scrap it, make changes in some ways, keep it the same?
I would say that Act 46 generally, with regard to the consolidation of school districts, that framework is not going to be changed. There may be some tweaks that need to be done generally, but the overall framework is not going to change.
So 900 students should stay in place, you think?
Well, I think that we need to make sure we've got to figure out whether that number was the right number or not. But I think the idea of the discussions that are happening out there are good and vibrant, and people are really embracing it. I think the question that's been asked is, are the thresholds preventing some of those conversations? Now, we get mixed messages. I'll be honest with you. I have gotten feedback on both sides of this issue about the thresholds. There are people who are really concerned about their impact on educational services. There are others who say it's
giving... These are the spending thresholds you're talking about.
The spending thresholds. Some people are saying, hey, it's giving us the backstop to do some of the things that we need to do. I know that the House Education Committee, the consensus generally right now is not to scrap the thresholds, but to increase the percentage up to to reflect the increase in the healthcare costs.
So instead of a 2% cap, it would be a little bit higher.
Be about 2.9.
Yeah.
So those are the questions I think that we're going to address. They're already starting to work on it in the Education Committee. I think that we'll see work on that happen over the next couple of weeks.
Is this where you see election year politicking perhaps coming into play? This is certainly a big issue for people who are running for higher office.
I think that it would exist whether there was an election year or not.
All right. Succinctly put, you mentioned that jobs and higher education are also things that you see as a sort of an underlying current in Vermonters for, mm-hmm. for concerns that they have. We consistently hear how low our unemployment rate is. So what is it that you think needs to be targeted in terms of jobs and infrastructure to ease that discomfort and concern?
Well, we hear that our unemployment rate is low. We hear from a lot of employers that they're having a hard time finding workers. And qualified workers. And we hear from a lot of employees who are saying, you know, I don't feel like I can move up the ladder. So to help people move up the ladder and to get more qualified employees, I think that we need to provide either better training programs or more effectively deploy our training programs or help people through college. I'll tell you one of the things, investments that we made last year that I think is going to really pay off is we helped VTC buy advanced manufacturing equipment to train their students.
VTC, Vermont Technical College.
Vermont Technical College. And what they're doing is they're working with a local employer, GW Plastics, and also with the tech center to use the local high school tech center to use that equipment to get people trained for manufacturing, advanced manufacturing. It's little things like that that are going to help people move up the ladder, and those are investments, incremental investments that make a difference in people's lives for employers and employees.
As you pointed out right when we were getting started, you are not running for re-election. This is your last year running the House and your last year in the House, at least for now. Mm-hmm. Is that going to change, candidly, is that going to change anything about your approach to this year?
I don't think that it will. I mean, I've always really tried to focus on what I think is going to work for Vermonters and less about my reelection.
Although you've brought your personal life into your ideas of what should be priorities this year.
Well, I've talked about it more. I mean, I think that any representative always sort of brings their personal experiences to the table when they're making decisions. I think that... I do think that I will be thinking about legacy and... but really, at the end of the day, I just want to make sure that people feel like they're being able to do good work in the state of Vermont.
That's House Speaker Shap Smith. He's a Democrat from Morrisville. Thank you very much for talking with us. Good luck with your last half of the biennium.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Jane.
We're broadcasting live from the State House today, talking with leaders of the Republican, Democratic, and Progressive parties. Listeners, share your thoughts on the top priorities for the coming session. What do you really want lawmakers to be working on? Let us know. You can post a note at vpr.net/Vermont Edition or call 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we'll have Joe Benning and Chris Pearson. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. We just heard from Democratic House Speaker Shap Smith talking about some of the issues likely to come up between now and May. Let's move over to the Senate and the Republicans. Joe Benning represents Caledonia County and is the Senate Minority Leader. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
And listeners, if you have a question for Senator Benning, you can call 1-800-639-2211 or post a comment on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. As we heard at the top of the show from reporter Neil Goswami, the Senate is meeting tomorrow to talk about and decide the fate of one of your Republican colleagues, Norm McAllister. You had been voicing your contention in the break between the Senate or the sessions that you think he should be expelled because he won't resign. Last month, the Senate Rules Committee, on which you serve, voted 3-2 to suspend McAllister. That's what you're recommending to the full Senate. That would be with pay until the conclusion of his trial on sex crime charges. Do you think the full Senate will uphold that suggestion that you've made?
I suspect that they will. The conversation has been ongoing since May, I believe it was May 8th.
And, when he was arrested.
Yeah, a lot of things have been happening behind the scenes over the summer and fall while the legislature was not in session, but the conversation has kind of morphed from do we do nothing to something all of a sudden got done. He was removed from his committee assignments. To do we go for a full expulsion, which would enable Franklin County to regain a full 2 Senate seats, to now a proposal to suspend, which would kind of leave us in a limbo situation pending the outcome of his trial.
You don't sound pleased with that solution.
I'm not, because I think that the citizens of Franklin County, the state of Vermont, and my own Republican caucus deserve to have a full voice in the Senate. I understand that this is very difficult for people because this has never been done before. The problem for me is that if we were in another environment, let's say that we were talking about a teacher and a student, it would be very clear what would happen immediately, and we're not in that mode yet of understanding just what the ramifications of our actions are going to be. My preference, frankly, would have been to make sure we made a clean break, gave the governor an opportunity to appoint somebody new, and then allow the full Senate to be in operation and continue on and get to the work of its business.
I want to talk about the work of the Senate's business, but just before we leave this topic, I want to clarify your perspective on this, because you've said that you support expulsion and now this sort of interim measure suspension, regardless of the guilt or innocence of Senator McAllister. Why is that not what you're basing it on?
You have to understand, and I'm a defense lawyer. I've been doing this for 32 years. The courtroom environment is a place that is subject to criminal rules of procedure. It has long-standing golden thread that somebody is innocent until proven guilty. And they have to abide by certain rules, like the hearsay rules, to make sure that only certain things can get in front of a jury. The problem in this situation is we are not a courtroom. We are a body politic. Our rules are not the rules of criminal procedure. They are the Senate's rules and Mason's rules and the Constitution. We don't have to abide by things like the hearsay rule. We can go right to the heart of a matter and get to a question of whether or not something has been said that gives a clear impression that something went on, and we can act on that. We don't have any restrictions of a judge saying, well, you can't take this into consideration or that into consideration. So recognizing that this is a different environment altogether, I would argue that we have not just a responsibility, but the authority to police ourselves, and that's where I think we should be going.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm talking with Senator Joe Benning. He's the minority leader and vice chair of the Judiciary Committee. And once you get through tomorrow, one thinks that it might actually be decided what's going to happen to Senator Norm McAllister. You're shrugging that maybe it won't be.
I think there are a lot of options that are presented no matter what the vote is tomorrow. And any of those options are likely to be surfacing.
So once something happens, though, and the Senate can get down to other business. We just heard from House Speaker Shap Smith about what he thinks some of the main priorities might be. Some of them are pretty clear. Marijuana legalization is going to be an issue. Act 46 is going to be an issue. Shap Smith says he's also planning to look at higher education and jobs. Do those jive with what you think the top priorities are?
I think the number one priority in this state right now, and I've been repeating this ad nauseum for, I guess, going on 6 years now, is to get a budget under control that's sustainable. I have sat through five budget votes. I have voted against every single one of them on the sole reason that we are not able to sustain the spending that we're doing. If you get that under control, that to me is our highest priority in the building. There are other things that are certainly on the list of being talked about, but the next thing on the list for me would probably be getting jobs back into Vermont and getting people back to work. Those are things that are going to be high on my priority list. You know already that I'm a co-sponsor on the marijuana bill.
With Senator Jeanette White.
I think there are a lot of things about that bill I'm certainly in favor of in moving the concept forward. I also can see that there are things that are not quite ready for prime time, so whether or not that takes up our session or overrides the other two concerns that I have is anybody's guess at this point. But as you know, we talk about an awful lot of things in this building.
You think it might? Do you think that question about marijuana legalization might not in the end pass, but be something that sucks all the air out of the room?
Well, I don't think it's going to suck all the air out of the room. I think people have expressed their opinions on the subject in various forums around the state. The concept is one that people are constantly talking about enough so that we really know what all the issues are. We just have to get to the bottom of whatever data we can collect from other places that have tried it. And if that conversation can happen in the next 4.5 months, then maybe something will result, as anybody's guess around here. But it's just one of those things. You crapshoot, throw the dice, and see what happens. But my own personal feeling is that that discussion is important to a lot of people, but it's not the most critical thing on our plates.
All right, so you mentioned that your body can talk about a lot of things at once, and one of the things that your Judiciary Committee is also going to be looking at is safety for state social workers.
Yeah.
Do you support making it a crime to threaten a social worker, a DCF worker?
I would have to really see the language on such a subject. I mean, people make statements all the time, and I'm in court constantly with individuals who have been charged with disorderly conduct or some kind of a threatening behavior. You really have to be careful how far you charge ahead with that kind of a bill. You want to react because you've got something in front of you that's horrific, and you want to take the time to do something and say, there, we did something. But a lot of times when you're reacting under an immediate crisis, you tend to overreach, and then we have a lot of problems after that. So at this point in time, I'm going to say that if that comes out with language that I can appreciate and understand and don't think the ramifications are going to be so overbroad, then probably I'll be going along with it.
We just have a couple seconds left, but I want to ask you about something that's not actually directly tied to your work in the Senate, and that's because you've waded publicly into the controversy over Donald Trump coming to Vermont. He's planning to speak at the Flynn Theater on Thursday evening.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on whether or not he should be allowed to speak and how you feel about him?
I got a petition from the Vermont Workers Center asking me to sign on that was directed not at Trump but at John Kalacki, the director of the Flynn Center. And I was horrified by that concept. You don't cut off the funding for a public forum that requires all of us to participate, no matter what our political differences or our personal tastes. And to me, that was a bullying tactic. I think that the folks who really don't like Donald Trump, the best solution to that is to come and peacefully protest. If you need to, you can stand in silence, buy up all the tickets you want, flood the hall, and leave. Those are all fine things, but don't target John Kalacki and the Flynn Center. That, to me, is just a terrible precedent for Vermont.
Will you be going?
Not at all. I'm not a Donald Trump supporter, and I have no intention to be in the middle of whatever ends up happening on Thursday night.
Have you come out in support of any of the candidates?
Not yet. I'm still weighing my options. There's far too many of them for me to say, all right, I'll go along with that one, but it's just waiting for them all to sugar off, as they say.
Joe Benning represents Caledonia County and is the Senate Minority Leader and Vice Chair of the Judiciary Committee. Thank you so much for talking with us
today.
Thanks
for having me, Jane. Nice to meet you.
We are broadcasting live from the State House today. Again, listeners, if you'd like to weigh in on what you see as the most pertinent issues of the session that just started this morning, call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Let's turn now to the Progressive Party. Chris Pearson is a Burlington State Representative and the House Progressive Caucus Leader. He joins us now. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Jane. Great to be here.
You got called out right at the beginning of the session. It was pretty embarrassing. It's your birthday today.
Yes, it is.
Did you?
43.
43. Okay, because there were a lot of comments about nobody was going to ask the age of any of the people. You have several colleagues who also have birthdays today. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
So we've now heard what Shep Smith and Joe Benning say are the top legislative priorities. Their particular priorities as well for the next 4 months or so. Are you in basic agreement?
Well, I want to hear the details. The devil is always in the details. But I think there's a growing recognition that our economy is stagnant for far too many Vermonters. Middle-class families are really struggling. Progressives, and I think we'll be joined by a lot of folks, are really going to make a push on property taxes. We've talked about it for many, many years. We're getting ready to put concrete proposals on the table that should keep robust school funding, but offer middle-class Vermonters some relief. They deserve relief. Bills are just too high.
It sounds like you're frustrated that no progressives were on the committee that drafted Act 46, the education reform package, that included this cap on spending and obviously has a lot to do with property taxes. What do you think would have been different if a progressive had been on that committee?
Well, we did fight the bill as it moved through the House. None of the progressives voted for it. The caps were particularly troublesome. And I said this going back 2 years ago when we started having a discussion about school consolidation and governance, voters are not saying, there's just too many school board members. They're saying my property taxes are too high. And yet somehow in the magic that is the legislature, we started focusing on governance. And I think in a way, maybe that was that's definitely a complicated issue, but it was perhaps easier than talking about the money. And so I think progressives tried hard, and if we were on the committee, would have maybe had more success in saying, no, we got to talk about the money. We got to talk about the fact that middle-class families, working-class families are paying a much higher percentage of their income to support schools than wealthy Vermonters who've seen their incomes grow. That's just not right. There's nothing progressive about our school funding structure, and we really need to address that.
Well, it sounds like you're going to get another crack at it this year.
I sure hope so, yeah.
What do you hope to introduce?
Well, I think the caps, I understand where they come from. They're sort of a strike, a quick strike to attempt to slow budget growth, but then,
and again, this is a 2% cap, so 2%
right.
Above what the budget was of the previous year for school districts who are creating their budgets.
And it tried to be a thoughtful cap address some of the differences between communities. But the bottom line is local voters keep supporting school budgets, and so either we honor that or we have a statewide system. We have this hybrid that is a problem. I would argue that investments in education are well spent. You look at my community of Burlington, we're doing very well, we're cost-effective, and we have growing enrollment. That's not the case everywhere. So there are tensions. They're very real. But, to me, the focus on consolidation and governance has not been well placed.
We've now heard from both Joe Benning and Shep Smith that they – while they both support the legislation, are not sure that marijuana legalization will pass this year. You're a strong supporter of legalization. Do you think it will?
I'm hopeful, yeah. I think that anytime we pass legislation that reflects reality, does a better job of reflecting reality, in Vermont, we're doing the right thing. The fact is, it's almost 20% of Vermont adult Vermonts are using cannabis monthly. We have some $125-150 million in an underground economy that's around marijuana today. So the idea is, why wouldn't we treat this like alcohol and tobacco and deal with this in an adult conversation? You know, I'd like to talk to my kids in a way that isn't going to get them in trouble at school. And there's all these tensions about things that they're kind of old-fashioned taboos that I think it's time to remove them. We need to treat it like alcohol and tobacco. I think that's appropriate. And I am hopeful. You know, if I had to put a number on it, it would be somewhere above 50%, but maybe not 80%.
That's sanguine, though. Above 50%, you're ahead of your colleagues there. On health care, some issues that are likely to come up, again, this Medicaid spending, certainly trying to figure out how to have a revenue source for that. Shap Smith would like to expand Dr. Dinosaur coverage. This is the coverage for lower-income young Vermonters. He'd like to raise the age.
He'd like to look at
raising the age and expanding Dr. Dinosaur. Are those going to be enough for you on the healthcare issue, or do you want to look at this more broadly again?
Well, you know, healthcare is very difficult. I'm vice chair of the House Healthcare Committee, and the fact is, you know, it's now over 20% of our economy goes to healthcare. It's crushing us in family budgets, in school budgets, which gets back to the property tax. We have not made significant strides. We do not have a sustainable system. So the question is, how can we do it? There are many of us, I'm one of them, who believes healthcare should be universal. It should be for everybody. That's how the advanced world treats this. For some reason in this country, we don't do that. But obviously, we've had a setback with the governor peeling back from single payer. So I think what you see with, there was recently a study around what would it look like to have universal primary care for every Vermonter. There's a proposal now to study the idea of universal health care for everyone under 26, which is called Dr. Dinosaur. These are attempts to figure out a smart path forward. We're not content to just sit back and say, well, we couldn't do it. Too bad. You know, we'll see you when it's 30% of the economy. That is not satisfying. So we are trying to figure out a solution to move forward. It's got to be a good one. It's got to be meaningful. But it maybe has to be more digestible than Shumlin's thoughts about jumping all the way to single payer in one fell swoop.
You know, Representative Pearson, I know I ask you this frequently, so I'm sorry for repeating myself and making you repeat yourself, but, you know, it's an ongoing issue for your party that you are the House Progressive Leader, but you preside over a very small caucus. So how, in this particular second half of the biennium, do you see yourself and your party guiding the priorities?
Well, the fact is, I mean, it just takes a few dedicated individuals to have it make a difference. Out of 150 of us in the House, it's quite possible to have impact. And if you look at these discussions we're having around progressive taxation, around health care, around marijuana, you know, going back to marriage equality, GMO labeling, all of these, just about, you can trace their origins back to a few progressives who were bold and went first. And so that's the role we play. Often, you know, we just play the role of being willing to put things out there, and maybe it takes time, maybe it takes more time than we want, but more often than not, people come our way. The fact is, most Vermonters agree with us. Working class Vermonters are struggling. The middle class is shrinking. We've got to address these issues. We try to talk loud and clear and put proposals on the table to address those issues, and we'll keep doing that.
Does that mean you put yourself out there at the risk of losing your seat because nobody else will do it?
Sometimes being controversial comes with the territory, but you know, so far our electoral success has, we've been able to at least maintain our small numbers. And I should say, you know, we're the only third party in the country to be able to come anywhere close to the success, and that's a real tribute to the spirit of civics in Vermont, I think.
Well, Chris Pearson is a progressive. He is a Burlington State Representative and the House Progressive Leader. Thank you very much for talking with us again. Hope the session goes well.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Jane.
We're opening the session at the State House today. We've been talking with the leaders of all three parties represented in the State House. Coming up, VPR's Bob Kinzel shares thoughts on how an election season could affect what happens in the legislature. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. We're broadcasting live from the Cedar Creek Room at the State House today as lawmakers open up the legislative session. We've just heard from leaders of the Democratic, Progressive, and Republican parties about their priorities in the coming months in the House and the Senate. But setting an agenda isn't a guarantee that it will come to fruition. And that might be particularly true in an election season, which, of course, this is. Here to help explore if an election season with some wide open seats is likely to change what actually gets done under the Golden Dome is VPR's Bob Kinzel. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Jane.
So as we know, all legislators in Vermont run for re-election, should they decide they want to run for re-election, mm-hmm. every 2 years, which means that this is an election year. And in terms of the big seats, House Speaker Shep Smith not running for re-election, Senators David Zuckerman and Keisha Ram are both running for lieutenant governor. How big an impact will the fact that we're in an election season, how big an impact might that have on what happens legislatively? I should say Representative Keisha Ram, by the way.
It always has an impact. There's no doubt about it. But let's go back to 2010 when there was an open gubernatorial seat. You had Senate President Peter Shumlin running. You had two other senators running. You had Lieutenant Governor Brian Doobie running. So there was a lot of politics in that session. I don't see so much for the statewide races this year, but look for it in the legislative races. The Republicans have been picking up seats in both the House and the Senate in the last few election cycles. They want to pick up more, and they see this as an opportunity. So look for them to really debate budget issues, any kind of tax issues. The Democrats will be very reluctant to bring up a tax bill. Look for property taxes to be a big issue here. So I think the electioneering will take place in the House and the Senate more than in the statewide races.
Do you see in that electioneering in the legislative races, legislators more likely to be sort of out there on an issue to get out and in front of the eyeballs of their constituents, or to be a little bit reticent and maybe not want to buck the tide on an issue that might be controversial like marijuana legalization, and instead of voting their conscience, really thinking about what their constituents might want?
I think they're going to vote their conscience on a lot of these issues because that's usually what they do. But they're going to be out in front on these issues too. Not only the statewide people who are running, but also the individual senators and House members also want to be on the record for certain issues. So you're going to see a lot of amendments to budget bills and tax bills because the Republicans are going to want to put the Democrats on record and vice versa when it comes to budget cuts. The Democrats want to put the Republicans on record. So it's going to go back and forth. It's definitely going to happen.
Before I let go of this issue, Bob, because I want to push you a little bit on what you said, that it's in the legislative races you see the potential for electioneering. Could you not see lawmakers who are running for higher office? I mean, the governor's seat is open. Presumably the lieutenant governor's seat is open since Phil Scott is running for governor. Sort of pushing what they see as popular policies or really trying to, again, get out there, be very vocal in the hopes that somebody like you or me might cover what they're saying.
Sure. They got to be very careful, though. Let's take Phil Scott as an example. He doesn't want to be out there so much that people say, oh, he's running for governor. He's electioneering here. So it's that fine line of being out there, taking a stand that supports your priorities. But if you do it too much, you know, it grows old.
All right, so let's move on to the issues, since I know, Bob, for you, that's where you really love to focus during the session. Election or no election, there are going to be big issues. We've been talking about them with the lawmakers that we've had on today, Shep Smith, Joe Benn, and Chris Pearson. And they're in agreement on some of the issues that are going to be big. Again, marijuana legalization, property taxes and education spending, Medicaid costs, jobs. They've all talked about jobs and a sort of general unease despite our low unemployment rate with this idea of how we're doing as Vermonters. Anything else you see as a big issue?
I think Act 46 and the spending caps are going to be a big one. You mentioned marijuana. I would also think that paid sick leave will come up. Maybe even an ethics commission with everything that's going on in the Senate this first week of the session. Will the ethics commission bill, which was introduced today, will it gain much traction? So I think there'll be a lot of issues like that.
Anything you're willing to handicap?
Well, you know, Shep Smith said he thought that marijuana was a complicated issue, and it is. I think there's a feeling outside of this building, it's almost a slam dunk. This is going to happen. I don't think that's the case at all. As Speaker Smith said, this is very complicated. For instance,
well, even Joe Benning said that, and he's one of the sponsors of the legislation.
That's right. I mean, are we going to have retail stores in Vermont? The bill calls for that in 2017. What about impaired drivers? Speaker Smith feels very strongly about that. You know, we noticed from the experience in Colorado that the retail stores have to deal in cash because they can't put the money in the bank because it's still against the federal law to legalize marijuana.
We've seen issues with that even with our dispensaries.
That's right. So this is going to get very complicated. My guess would be right now, if you did a poll of Vermonters and said, should marijuana be legalized, two-thirds would say yes. But then you get into the detail. Should this happen? Should that happen? And I think that coalition starts to break apart. So I would say 50-50 best for this legislature to legalize marijuana.
What about Act 46, the education reform bill that included these spending caps and property taxes? Just a perennial concern here. They just passed Act 46 in 2015, and now we're already looking at changing it.
That's right. And there are four sides of this issue. People who want to repeal the spending caps, people who want to delay them, people who want to change them, and people who don't want to do anything. This is going to be a fascinating issue to watch, and I have no idea how this is going to turn out.
Good. Well, it'll be exciting for all of us. That's VPR's Bob Kinzel. Bob, thank you so much. Opening day, always a great day to talk with you. Always a great day to be in the State House as the action begins. Thanks very much.
My pleasure.
All right, that will do it for today. As we heard earlier in the broadcast, tomorrow the State Senate will decide what, if anything, it wants to do about Norm McAllister's standing in that chamber. And on Thursday, Governor Peter Shumlin will deliver his State of the State address. VPR will be covering these events at the State House all week, so make us your source for reporting and for discussion of these events. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri and Sam Gail Rosen, with assistance from Sarah Matthews. Liam Connor directed the program, Chris Albertine and Frank Alwine engineered today's broadcast, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. Special thanks to the Sergeant at Arms and staff here at the Vermont State House for their help in today's broadcast from the Cedar Creek Room. We've moved this year. We are in new digs in the Cedar Creek Room, and boy, does it feel great to be out in the open. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks very much for listening.